Well, all her gifts I got for her, I had them in boxes, separate boxes. How, would it have been ethical if I just made her wrap her own Christmas gifts?
I
I
don't
thought about it. I didn't do it.
I've become.
That'd be like, I'm gonna shoot you. Here's a shovel. Dig your own grave.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Buzz's girlfriend, Woof.
Woof.
Do you think that's actually her name?
Woof? It could be.
Buzz, it's your girlfriend, Woof.
Yeah, it could be. It could have been. You never know. We don't know. We never got the Buzz spinoff we wanted. We instead got Home Sweet Home Alone, which is kind of a Buzz spinoff. You know, I don't know. I've watched Home Alone 1 and 2 thrice this year, and
three times each.
Twice for the first, three for the second. And shit. I will say Buzz is a real douche. But anyways, with that being said, Gus over there, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, and indeed here we are, as promised. You know, we made a lot of hollow promises as of late, and here we are, as promised, recording the second film of Christmas season, Home Alone.
It is a Christmas miracle.
There it is. And yes, indeed, if you're new to the show here, let me explain what we do. Every week we watch a movie. We then take the pod to discuss said film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched and we have a little fun with it. Imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Imagine what it would look like if it was a if it was an animated film and it was made again live, baby live. Or imagine something like this. Imagine in a movie and re-genreing it. So we have a little bit of fun with the film, and then we have a little bit of questiony time and head on out of here. Sound good? Grand? Wonderful? Okay. That is what we'll be doing today. And on the agenda, we have one of Gus's favorite, if not favorite, overall Christmas film, Home Alone.
Oh, yeah. Certainly my favorite Christmas movie. And as I said last week, I believe. I have to sit long and hard, but why wouldn't it be in my top 10? Ooh, your dog doesn't like that.
No.
She's like,
she's like Edward Scissorhands!
She's like, what?
Yeah.
You blew up there. I didn't hear you.
I said, she says, Edward Scissorhands!
Yeah.
Home Alone. I think I mentioned this to you early on. I said, that music hits, the music starts, the beginning, and that's Christmas. Like, that music, I don't know why, either, but there's something inherently magic about it, that opening track of Home mm-hmm. Alone, that you're like, this is Christmas. Maybe it's I'm assuming what that is it's watching that movie at Christmas time every year for as long as I can remember, so it's kind of like, you know, that soundtrack of life, so to speak, it starts playing, and it's like, oh man, this gives me the feels, like I'm a kid again.
Listen, John Williams, King Whimsy himself, captures the essence of Christmas within the score, especially the theme. The song "Somewhere in My Memory" has become a classic Christmas song. Nominated for an Oscar. It's those sleigh bells, baby. You hear those sleigh bells ringling, jing, jing, jingling too, and you're like, fuck, it's Christmas. But then you get the little Wet Bandits note in there too, and you're like, ah, something's afoot. Christmas movies ain't Christmas movies unless there's a problem.
Christmas movies aren't Christmas movies unless there's the wet and sticky bandits. That's what they should have. They need to remake. They make the third one. They're the wet and sticky bandits.
I don't even want to know what that looks like.
We're the stiff bandits. What? But
we've been in prison a long time.
Home Alone, right off the bat, I know two people that do not like this movie, and both of them have very superficial reasons for not liking these films. The one is my wife, who does not like Home Alone strictly because of Macaulay Culkin. She doesn't like his acting in it. She doesn't like him. She thinks he's an asshole in it, and she's like, she doesn't like looking at him. Doesn't enjoy the movie. And then the second is my mother-in-law, and she just doesn't think it really has much to do with Christmas. I'm like, what movie are you watching? There's a lot of, it's all about family and looking past differences and forgiving and forgetting, especially forgetting. Home Alone, all in all, is a wonderful Christmas film with a wonderful tale to be told. One that people, for whatever reason, similar to you with, trying to explain away certain aspects of the new Marvel movie, people just want to point out how this movie couldn't have possibly happened in real life. And I'm like, just let it be. It happened. It happened in the movie. I'm watching it right now. You know what I mean by that?
Explain yourself. What do you mean? I can understand how it wouldn't be able to happen today.
Yeah. Well, I've seen people say that before. I think they do a really good job explaining it throughout the movie. They throw away his ticket and, they accidentally count the neighbor and they're late and there's electricity and stuff like that. I think they do a good job, but I've had people, be it my wife, be it friends, I've had a couple friends mention I watch it, but it always just, I don't know, I just don't think it's that realistic that could actually happen. I'm like, in the 90s, sure. I mean, it's, they didn't have cell phones and all these different things. I saw a meme today, it was 2 days ago. It was Home Alone today, and it was Kevin woke up, looked at his phone, texted his mom. He's like, "Hey, I'm still home." And she's like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. We just landed. We'll get there as soon as possible. We'll call the police to get over to the house." It was very easily taken care of by today's standards. But back then, it all makes sense in the context they tell the story.
Maybe. He's also 8 years old, so I don't think he would have a cell phone.
But today.
Yeah, who knows?
He'd have an iPad that has some form of texting app.
Yeah, that's true. The only thing I find unbelievable about this movie is the fact that the wet bandits, Harry and Marv, survive.
Yes. And that they're the premier robbers in the world.
Yeah, infamous.
They could steal the Pink Panther if they put their mind to it.
That's right.
That's the crossover I want.
But you haven't explained yet. What are they saying is unbelievable?
The one I always hear was the ticket. They don't know that the ticket got thrown away. They're like, wouldn't they just know that they had one extra ticket? But the ticket gets thrown away. So I've heard that one before.
It gets thrown away during the pizza debacle, yeah. And all the milk, yeah, gets spilled everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It gets thrown away. You can clearly see it says Kevin at the top. So I've seen that one. I've seen other people say why didn't they, why didn't the mom recount? I'm like, well, she didn't, because she asked her eldest daughter to do so, and she did count correctly. She just thought it counted the wrong kid. Well, why didn't anyone notice that, the kid walked away? Well, the eldest is at the end. She doesn't see the kid walk away. She and everyone else does, but they weren't counting.
Everyone's in a mad rush. They have 45 minutes to get to the airport. And, the plane takes off in 45 minutes.
We're not going to make it.
We live in different times, but, even with 45 minutes, that's not enough time to get to the airport and get to your flight. But.
You wouldn't make that today by any stretch. You definitely wouldn't make it back then. Either, I don't think.
We were watching the movie, and it has that epic play on some Tchaikovsky Nutcracker suite, where it's like, ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, whatever. And they're running through the airport, and they're like, hold the plane, here's our ticket. And they're like, oh, you just made it, get on. Like, I was
they
like,
count.
ah. I was like, ah, pre-9/11.
Yeah, pretty much. Even the sequel is the same way. He's like, yeah. My family's on this plane. He's like, boredom. I was like, ah, I don't know. boredom, yeah. But make sure he locates his family. Locating his family. That's him. Are you sure? Yep. I was like, okay.
Yeah. But, I don't know. And, you know, I hear that this one baffles me the most. You just said your mother-in-law does it. Makes me want to give her the people's elbow. How can you not consider this a Christmas movie? And if not, what do you consider a Christmas movie? Because it has all the elements of the Christmas movie. I mean, fuck, a giant subplot of the movie is the mother is trying to get home to her 8-year-old son so he's not alone for Christmas.
Because this is Christmas, the season of perpetual hope.
Yep, exactly. Like, they blatantly say it. And the Christmas whimsy is littered throughout this movie. And, it's all, like, everything is themed around Christmas. Even the music is Christmas. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
I've heard people say this before, and I'm just like, what do you want?
I think people, like, there are a certain group of people that need, like, Christmas movies to be, like, strictly, it's only about Christmas, period.
What about Miracle on 34th Street? It's not about Christmas. It's about a court case to prove that this guy is actually Santa Claus.
And I just watched that the other night, or other day, rather. Same thing that happened last year, trying to get the wife to watch it. And same exact thing, literally. Turn it on, turns up, comes on, it's playing that beautiful opening score. And immediately, this is black and white. Yes, we watched it last year. Oh, and then 2 minutes later, sleep. And that happened last year.
I'll have to give you the shitty colored version.
Yeah. I mean, I watched it all. It's a fantastic movie, and it is very much so a Christmas movie, but that's coming from me who thinks, you know, everything's Christmas, other than Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, I was saying, I think Edward Scissorhands and Batman Returns are Christmas movies.
Batman Returns, maybe. Yes, sure. I mean, I watch Batman Returns any time of the year, and I'd be fine. Whereas, like, Home Alone, I'd feel dirty if I watched it in June.
Yeah, I hear you. But, like, It's a Wonderful Life, which we talked about and reviewed last year. Tune in, check it out. Is a Christmas classic, regarded as a Christmas classic.
Yeah, I just saw a list that put it as, like, the number one Christmas movie of all time.
And it has almost nothing to do with Christmas.
It had no intention of being a Christmas movie.
No.
This did. This does.
Yep. Exactly. So it's like, what do people want?
I don't know.
Are they just looking for something to complain about?
It's more that. Looking for things to say, this isn't a Christmas movie because, I mean, these are the same people that are like, I don't like The Grinch. Because Jim Carrey. I'm like, Jim Carrey is the only great thing about that movie. When's the last time you watched that one? Just side note real quick.
I think two Christmases ago.
Man, it's a film, that's for sure.
Oh, I love that movie. I'm so impressed by that movie because if it were made today, well, one, it was made just a couple years ago. Not the same thing, but yeah. But it was CGI, and that's the point I was going to make. If it was made today, it'd be all CGI. All the houses, anyway, the town of Whoville, would be all CGI. And I'm so blown away by that movie that it's all practical.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about that movie is some of the directing. To be honest, there's some shots where I'm like, that was jarring. Ron Howard's directing. But
now, speaking of just like, aesthetics and directing and money and budget and stuff like that, this movie was made for not very little, but surprisingly a low amount, below the average even for its time. It was made for $18 million, where at the time I think the average movie cost about $30 million to make. So it's kind of impressive that they're able to put together this classic quality film on, you know, a below average budget. But also, you know, dealing with a kid actor in the union and such, you only get a certain amount of hours a day. And it has to be mostly daylight, mostly. You can film throughout the night, but there's all kinds of rules, and I don't know them. But I know it made filming this movie very difficult, especially during nighttime scenes. So, like, for example, that classic scene where Kevin orders a pizza and he plays the movie Angels with Filthy Souls to, like, kind of trick the delivery man. It's at night. Well, they filmed the scenes with Macaulay Culkin during the day, and then they filmed the pizza delivery guy shots at night.
Little Neros.
Yeah. So, like, it kind of baffles me that they were able to put this movie together, Christmas Miracle style, but it's such a classic, and it's so near and dear to my heart because of the things we mentioned earlier. It does capture the essence of Christmas, and around that, it makes you feel warm and cozy, and I actually get a nice big old lump in my throat at the very end when, you know, his mother comes home and they see each other, and, you know, that music swells and crescendos, and they embrace, and you just feel all the Christmas warmth, and the family comes home, but...
Wait a minute. How did you guys get home?
Yeah.
I will say this, though. Those listeners who've been with us since the beginning, all one of you, you know that it doesn't take a lot to make Gus cry.
This is true. It's very true. But this movie also, it just has it all. It'll make you laugh, it'll make you cry.
Hey, and it's cool.
My God. The duo of Harry and Marv, Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern is... Like, I just live for that energy, those two.
Yeah.
And they're so funny. Daniel Stern is hilarious. But what's great is Joe Pesci, mostly known for being a comedic actor. No, sorry.
Dramatic actor, yeah.
Yeah.
What, do I amuse you?
Yeah.
Like, yes, you do. You're hilarious. I loved you in Gone Fishing.
Yeah, which is after this. But, yeah, like, that... This is the kind of movie also, like, I've seen a thousand times, but every time I watch it, I laugh equally as hard as I always do, but sometimes certain scenes just hit different, and I laugh harder. Mm-hmm. This time watching it, when he's just like, they're talking at the back door, and he's just like, I know you're in there, and you're all alone, and then he slowly is, Kevin's putting that BB gun out the doggy door right into his nuts and yeah. fires. And the sound Joe Pesci makes, just holy shit, that cracked me up.
And I it's always Daniel Stern that gets me through the entire film consistently, especially in Home Alone 2. I was saying how Home Alone 1 this year didn't do as much for me as Home Alone 2 did. Last year when I watched Home Alone 2, the part that popped me the biggest was when Tim Curry gets slapped in the face. He's like, do you want to go up? It's very cold.
His chin starts quivering.
Yeah, he starts crying. This time, it was the two moments. So, wow, what a hole! And his scream at the end of the movie. It was the scream when he was getting electrocuted. That's when I started laughing so hard. This movie, it did not that this one didn't make me laugh. It just didn't pop me as big as those moments in the second one.
I say Home Alone is, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time, but... You know, Home Alone 2 is essentially Home Alone 1. It's like, it's the same thing, basically.
Yes, same energy.
Yeah. I mean, even plot beats, very, very similar. I like Home Alone 2 more.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's one of my favorite movies of all time? I guess.
Yeah.
I find Home Alone 2 to be more rewatchable, funnier, because it takes what we get in the first one and just bumps it up.
Goes beyond. Yeah. I Home Alone 1, on the surface, like you said, it was made for cheap. It's also like a really, really simple film. I mean, it's big family going on a trip to Paris, beautiful.
Horrible.
Yeah, go into, going to Paris. He's Kevin Macaulay Culkin's character is kind of the black sheep of the family. No one, he's the youngest. He feels like he's being picked on. He also, you can't go into this movie thinking like, oh, Kevin never does anything wrong. He definitely does not handle situations the best, but he's also treated, he is borderline abused by some of his family members, and no one does a thing about it throughout.
Yeah. I mean, he needs to have his flaws so he can grow as a person.
Yeah.
And he needs these people to treat him horribly
so they can forget him,
so he can wish them away.
Yeah. I mean, both movies do this where I'm like, I'm very confused as to why both of them aren't in trouble, or why more people aren't in trouble in this scenario. Like Buzz in this film, what causes the whole ordeal is they get pizza. Buzz starts bullying his brother, eats all the cheese pizza, tells him that he's gonna have to throw it up, then starts like mimicking throwing up. Kevin pushes him, and he falls into the milk. He falls into the milk and the Pepsi, and it spills, and chaos ensues. The whole family trying to not get milk on them, and gets on the tickets and all that stuff, and. Kevin's the only one that gets in trouble. Now, he didn't incite the incident. He retaliated. But still, I was like, someone has to be like, all right, Buzz, you're just as much to blame in this. But Kevin, again, is the black sheep. Same in the sequel, where I get Buzz apologizes, but I would like, I feel like even with an apology, most families would be like, all right, you're still grounded because you incited this incident.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Buzz.
They're just bad parents.
Yeah, they're very absent parents, as you can tell.
They never forget their luggage, though.
Good one.
Thank you.
Good pull. That's from the second one. Yeah, I don't know. There's no excuse. I mean, if as we see throughout the intro to the movie, Kevin is already getting under everyone's skin. And it was just kind of the last straw. Like, the mother already had like her eye on him for his attitude earlier. So yeah, I don't know. It's once you become a parent, something becomes abundantly clear that you can't tell a 10-year-old that the world's ending. That's from Interstellar Space.
Shit.
yes, which
can.
Is almost like Home
yes,
Alone.
Watch Greenland.
Yeah. but anyway, what am I trying to say here? Yeah, I have no excuse for why he gets away with it, but if he didn't, then there wouldn't be a movie.
Exactly. You're
but
watching.
But it makes sense. I like how they kind of cover their tracks. Like, because he retaliates and spills stuff, it causes the tickets to get ruined. And because the tickets get ruined, that also helps in, like, covering up, like, plot holes. I don't see any plot holes in this movie. There could be some. I don't see them. Or maybe I choose to be blind to them.
Maybe
I love this movie too much.
Maybe Kevin is from another universe where there is no plot holes.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily ever pick up on anything where I'm like, oh, that's not explained, or like that's they no way they would have forgot that. And I was like, it's so very clear as to why and how they forget him. Even in the sequel, it's very clear, because they even cover their tracks there, where they have this sense of security because they got him all the way to the airport, and then he actually makes the mistake. They truly don't necessarily make a total mistake, other than they actually try. In the second one, they say, like, oh, we want to double check. And they're like, we'll make sure everyone gets on the plane. But it's like, they don't know who everyone is.
That's true.
But they count all the tickets, and they're not missing any tickets because they gave Kevin this ticket already. So it's, yeah, the first movie, I don't necessarily see any issues throughout at all. And everyone plays their parts perfectly. You know, like I said, my wife doesn't like Macaulay Culkin, but I think he plays the character perfectly. Is his acting world's best? Not necessarily, but there's a billion worse child actors in history than Macaulay Culkin's performance in this movie. And, you
he
know.
became king of the world after this movie. He was like Hollywood A-lister, and he was in a lot of stuff after this, and he was getting big, big money.
Yeah, and so is it. You know, no, you don't. I don't know. I don't think he's necessarily that bad. And like you said, Daniel Stern, Joe Pesci are incredible. Catherine O'Hara is awesome throughout the movie. All the actors play their roles very well. The actor, I don't know his name off the top of my head, but like the actor that plays Buzz or the actor that plays Uncle Frank, like they all play their roles incredibly well. There's really no weak link throughout the film.
Even Macaulay Culkin's brother, Kieran Culkin, who's super popular on that show Succession right now, is in this movie as his little cousin, Fuller.
Yeah, he wets the bed.
Yeah.
That moment pops me every now and again, every so often, when he looks up at Fuller. It's like right before he shoves Buzz. And Fuller's just taking a giant gulp of Pepsi and then just gives him a piss smile.
Go easy on the Pepsi.
This little shit.
Yeah.
It's a good moment.
Here's the question. The question that's been asked for decades now. What does Kevin's dad do for a living that he can afford that house, but also he can afford to take that giant family to fucking Paris?
They live in Chicago, right? Suburbs of Chicago. My question more is what is not Uncle Frank, their other uncle, do? Because he owns houses in New York City and Paris.
Yeah. I read that, like, it's actually not Kevin's dad who pays for the trip to Paris. What if it's Kevin's dad's brother, so his uncle? I'm like, I guess. What's he do?
I think they... Don't they say something like that? That his brother's flying them all out to Paris? Doesn't Catherine O'Hara say that? The mom?
I can't remember. I think the uncle says something about it.
He says something like, easy, your dad's paying good money for this trip, or something like that. Maybe that's a sequel, though. That is the sequel. Because he says, sorry, Uncle Cheapskate, or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what he does, but it could be he works for his brother. His brother owns a company or some shit, and he works for his brother.
They own a chain of Little Nero's.
Yeah, and then there's just Uncle Frank, who, you know, knows how to speak a little bit of French and give people shrimp. That's for later. He has no redeeming quality throughout the entire movie. There is not a single moment where he is redeemed in the sequel too.
Or the sequel.
He's like never redeemed whatsoever. Like there's no moment. Like even Buzz gets a moment. He's like, "Merry Christmas, Kev." Like in that movie and in the first.
Kind of cool he didn't burn down the place.
Yeah, in the first one he's got one too. Like it's Uncle Frank's just an asshole through and through.
He's true to his character.
Yeah, there is that moment where he brings in the shrimp in Paris, and you can see that's the one shot you see the other uncle. And
that's right.
The other aunt.
I didn't know that until I've seen this. Been watching this movie for almost 30 years. I just noticed that last night. I'm like, who's that?
Yeah, it's like their other aunt.
The aunt and uncle.
She's like, Frank, those are for later, and he just gives the shrimp away and doesn't. And you can see she like hates him with a passion. Yeah. But, everyone plays to their strengths. Plot's airtight. The only thing that I've always questioned, and I get why, because Kevin's kind of afraid of everything, including the police, I've seen too before where people are like, why didn't he call the cops? And it's like, well, he thinks he's a criminal. He doesn't know. He doesn't know if he's going to be arrested for stealing the toothbrush midway through the film. And things like that. So it's like he doesn't want to.
That would have been a little tighter too. I don't think this happens, but that would have been a little tighter if that scene where he goes and accidentally steals a toothbrush and he thinks he's a criminal. If that night is the night where they're like, can you send a police officer over to check on the house? So it's a police officer knocking on the door. So he's then afraid, like, oh no, the police are coming to my house, you know?
Yeah.
Because I stole this toothbrush. I got to hide.
Yeah, because I mean, but you get it though, because he's also very young. He's like, "This is my house. I'm going to protect it from these people, yeah. And I don't need the police or I don't need their help, et cetera, et cetera."
He also doesn't know it's the police because earlier in the movie, he gets afraid that people are trying to break in.
Yeah, and that's when he's hiding upstairs. He's hiding under the blanket.
Yeah, so he hears knocking. It's normal
being the police though are very confused in this movie. like these people are gross negligence.
All the lights are on. If he would have looked over, he would have saw there's a garage open with two cars in there, and he's just like, "There's nobody here. Tell him to count the kids again."
Yeah, even at the police department, what do they call her? Hyper on two.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was always like, I'm like, these gross negligence. Oh, hi, ma'am, it's you again. The whole ordeal leading up to this moment, the thing that always makes me laugh is when he almost hits Kevin with the car, Joe Pesci's character, Harry, and he smiles and you see his gold tooth and Kevin realizes who he is. He's the fake cop from the beginning of the movie, and starts backing up, and he doesn't like how he looked at him, et cetera, and they're following him, and he starts to run. He's like, "Why would he run?" I'm like, "Because you're following him in a van." I think it's played for laughs, but
as we see too, I mean, they are not the brightest.
No,
they get outsmarted by a kidney gardener.
Yeah, supposing the cops figure us for a job. Start asking us about murders in the area. Getting into the part of Home Alone that everyone knows, because I'm going to assume that almost everyone and their mother has seen Home Alone at this point.
Or at least know what happened.
Getting into the finale, what a cool idea for a movie of a kid left home alone. That premise could have been... The premise overall, the ultimate finale, the crescendo of the movie, doesn't need to be a Christmas movie whatsoever. Like, this could have been a summer movie. This could have been, it could have been anything, really. It didn't need to be this Christmas film. That's sprinkled throughout, which adds to the charm and magic of the movie. It's better because of it, because of the Christmas setting. And the themes throughout. But theoretically, this movie could have taken place at any time of the year. Oh, they're going on a summer vacation, and they left me behind, and people are trying to break into the house on summer vacation while a lot of people are traveling. It makes more sense in the Christmas time, because everyone's gone for Christmas. But
Yeah, that, and part of it is there's always lots of goods, in the house during this time of year, and that's what they're hitting it up for.
But what I'm saying is this part is just cool in that the finale is just retelling a Predator. It's just Kevin booby trapping up the house to prevent these two robbers from getting in and creating some great contraptions and traps that definitely would kill and maim many. I also wonder if any true robber, even if they knew that it was just like an 8-year-old home alone, if they would actually try to still break in, or if they'd be like, "Yeah, it's probably not a good idea."
Well, you'd think that, but we see it in the end that Joe Pesci is about to bite off this 8-year-old's fingers.
Bite him.
We'll get to that. If that the neighbor didn't knock him out with a shovel, he was going to bite off this kid's fingers.
Yeah. Him. I mean, they're going to murder him in the second one. They're going to shoot him.
Yeah, I don't think they have any trouble robbing a house with an 8-year-old in there.
Yeah, but
that scene, a big subplot too is Kevin getting over his fears, mm-hmm. right? And the symbol of his fears is their old creepy neighbor who salts the sidewalks, and he's the shovel slayer, is the rumor going about town. Yeah. And ultimately, every time Kevin sees this guy, he gets scared and screams or runs away. Well, they meet in a church because they both are there because they feel bad about themselves. And they get to understand each other and help each other out. So what I love about this scene is you get the nice warm feels, but what leads into it? You got the Carol of the Bells, which is probably my favorite Christmas song or Christmas time song, and then it goes into my favorite piece of music in this movie, which is called Setting the Trap. And I got to see this movie a couple years ago in one of those symphony showings where the movie plays and the orchestra plays the music underneath the movie.
Yeah.
And when this kicked in, my goosebumps grew 8 sizes that day. And because it just gets your blood pumping. And that's also why I like the second one more, because the Setting the Trap, not only is the scene longer, but the piece of music is longer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so fun seeing all the booby traps, and you're just like, oh, here we fucking go. As soon as he lays out that battle plan, you're like, it's time.
And yeah, watching the traps play out how they do is a lot of fun, because it's like, oh, they can't get in the house, and then once they get in the house, it's a house of horrors. What would you say is your favorite trap overall?
Damn. Favorite trap overall.
Or let's do this one. Let's play Home Alone Awards here. Most painful trap. Which do you think would be the most painful, or which one makes you cringe the most?
In Home Alone 1?
In Home Alone 1.
Definitely, I don't know. It's the one that makes me cringe the most is either the nail on the foot or the hand on the doorknob.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I stepped on a nail as a young child, as you know, so that one always makes me cringe. But for whatever reason, the one that always makes me go is him stepping on the ornaments. Each ornament popping under his foot, and he's just screaming.
Yeah, Daniel Stern did that stunt himself with his bare feet.
Did he not have this, some kind of padding on the bottom of his feet?
No, the ornaments were sugar glass. However, sugar glass can still do damage.
Yeah, but it still hurt. Stepping on a fucking Lego feels like you died and your soul left your body.
That would have been too much if Kevin laid out Micro Machines and Legos.
Be dead.
Yeah. I want someone to re-edit Die Hard when the villain finds out that John McClane isn't wearing shoes, and he tells the villain, the other henchman, he's like, shoot the glass. And they shoot the glass, so he has to step on the glass. It's like, shoot the glass, but it cuts to all these Legos falling on the ground or something.
Yeah, so the most painful. What do you think's most effective? Most effective trap, or booby trap? Yeah.
Most effective would be when they're trying to get to the treehouse and they're climbing the rope, and he just cuts the fucking rope.
That's pretty good. I was gonna say the paint cans, because out of all the ones that had occurred so far, that's the ones that kill. Those are the ones that would have fucked him up. And the sequel, the bricks, he starts with the bricks. And this one, he's aiming to kill after. He literally tortures them, and he's like, all right, time to kill these fucks.
Yeah, this movie, there is low chance of getting killed other than the paint buckets. Yeah, you swing a full can of paint at someone's face, even a half a can of paint, it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
At least, at the minimum, knock out a tooth.
Yeah.
But, yeah, everything else you can survive from. Maybe the iron to the face, but maybe.
Even when Harry gets up and beats the fuck out of Marv with the
crowbar. The crowbar.
I'm like, that's some internal bleeding.
That would hurt. That would be the cringiest one is the spider on the face.
Yeah, that's the best moment in this movie. Yep. Prove me wrong.
Second best scream in maybe third best scream.
Third best scream in cinema. Yeah.
Third best scream in cinema. The other two are in Home Alone 2.
Yeah. That's probably the most effective trap would be that one. Lamest trap.
You're dead, and walks into he gets silicone all over his face and gets peppered with feathers. Looks like a chicken.
Why are you dressed like a chicken? Why'd you have to take your shoes off? That's good.
That's probably the lamest one, because it does nothing.
And
never mind. I was saying the first one, he gets slime all over him, but that's just on the ladder.
Yeah, he makes the ladder all slippery.
Now the second one, that has a high kill. Yeah, that has a high kill count in that one.
Well, he falls down the hole. They take multiple bricks to the face. Harry literally blows up at one point, sticks his flaming head into a toilet of kerosene. I keep on calling him Norm. Marv gets electrocuted to holy shit.
Yeah.
What else? They have some, what's the tool chest?
Tool chest to the body, like that would kill you.
Yeah.
So many things. They fall off the building into like very shallow barrels of oil.
Yeah. And then he lights the same thing. They're climbing down the rope to get to him. He dipped the rope in kerosene and lights the rope on fire.
It's better. I did think of another trap in the first one that could be aimed to kill. The icy steps.
Yeah. I mean, the icy steps, even the icy front porch or the icy front walkway, because they both fall and crack their heads pretty good.
Yeah, that could do it.
Which one's... Oh, the iron to the face, too.
I said that one.
Did you say... I was thinking, for some reason, when I thought iron, I was thinking like tire iron in my head, and tire iron went to the crowbar. I'm like, crowbar to the face.
He didn't hit him in the face with the crowbar.
Nah, he hits him in the gut with trying to kill the spider. Did I get it?
I did see like a science thing, and the amount of velocity going down holding a crowbar of that weight would have just... And he hits him like right in the heart area. It would have killed him too, I think, is what they said in the science video I watched of like the science of the traps.
Science of Home Alone.
Yeah.
How many would kill you? That's the most fun part of the movie. There's lots of good moments throughout the movie. Be it like him realizing he's home alone to begin with, and that he made his family disappear, and he kind of treats it like a party and gets to do whatever he wants and eat junk and watch rubbish.
It's only 2 days too.
Yeah. The end of the movie is really where it's all at. This is where like the movie gets all its best moments are in that finale. Mm-hmm. Leaning into that, the final bit. I always wondered, like, do you think they ever, like, Kevin ever tells them, or they ever find out that Kevin, like, went through this ordeal? Like, because I wonder that at the end. He's like, Kevin, what did you do to my room? I'm like, did they ever, like, figure that out? Like, oh, there were people trying to break in, and I stopped them.
Yeah, they never explain it. They don't say it in the sequel. They just kind of like it. It's played off like he never tells them, but it's impossible. Like police were involved in the arrest.
Unless Murphy, his neighbor, unless he like kind of,
old man Marley.
Yeah. Takes the rap for it. Says like, yeah, it was me. I stopped them.
But I mean, I don't know. I doubt it. Like the guy who's attempted robbery.
Yeah.
So there would definitely be something going on.
Did he clean up all the traps all night too? Like, did he just hang out and clean up all the traps?
He had to have, because that house is spotless the next morning.
Yeah. He never even ate his macaroni and cheese dinner.
You know what? Funny film mistake. Earlier in the movie, he asked the cashier at the register, like, are those microwavable meals any good? She's like, I don't know. I never tried them. He's like, I'll give them a whirl for the kids. So he goes and has...
He doesn't say for the kids for that, though. So yeah, it's for the kids, for the army figures.
That's right. So he's like, I'll give them a whirl. And that night, he's eating his mac and cheese dinner. Well, and a scene later, if you look at the dinner table, the plate is still there, but it's a microwavable meal. Has like a little brownie, little green beans.
That's a mistake. They lost their craft sponsorship.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I don't know why. The older I've gotten, the better those Kraft mac and cheese dinners taste.
Oh, like, I love me some Kraft mac and cheese.
Like, growing up, I was like, these things kind of suck unless they're shapes. And I had one for lunch today. I'm like, this is the best thing I've had all week.
Yeah, I like those. I like SpaghettiOs too.
Yeah, I'm like, this shit's amazing. This neon cheese is the best thing I've ever had in my life.
I'll tell you what, this movie is so well crafted and is designed to be a people pleaser, and it clearly was. This movie was a giant hit. I believe it was the number one movie of 1990, and it was for. It is even currently in the number five spot of movies that have stayed number one at the box office the longest. This movie was number one for 12 weeks.
Jesus.
Straight number one at the box office. I think number one is E.T. with 16 weeks, which is super long.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's four months. Yeah. Top of the box office. This movie rightfully deserved its praise and its success. I still think, you know, this is a movie that I will continue to watch every year and enjoy, and will pass on to all. And I definitely think that it's just a staple for me. It's one that's like, I want to watch it. I could easily throw it on again. I actually, before we recorded tonight, the wife works late, and so she was going to try and take a little nap, and I laid down and on the couch, and I turned on Christmas Vacation for her, and I fell asleep, but she didn't, and I had almost decided to put on Home Alone. Like, I was between, like, I knew that she probably wanted to have some kind of Christmas movie on, so I put on her favorite, but I almost put on Home Alone just because, like, I was like, I'm in the mood to have that just kind of play again in the background while I
just watched this for the third time this year. I'll watch it again, Dan.
Kind of. It's the feeling. It's the feeling. Having it on in the background, I mean, that's like I said, that's part of the magic, as you say, or as I said last week, part of the magic of Christmas as you get older starts to fade. But it's, you know, wherever you can find that feeling, if it's in movies or music or reading books or whatever it may be about Christmas, watching videos and what have you, do it to maintain that magic. And I watch/ just have Christmas movies playing in the background just because that encapsulates the feel. There's no snow. It's supposed to be like 50 degrees and rainy this year on Christmas. And instead, you know, watch a nice Christmas movie and you get some snow.
True story. Well, everyone has their Christmas traditions. Things they like to do every year that just put them in the right spirit. Our mother, her tradition for I don't know how long, since we've been born at least, has been to watch the movie It's a Wonderful Life while she wraps Christmas presents. I've kind of adopted that tradition over the past few years, only I watch Home Alone while I wrap Christmas presents, and that was no different this year.
I just don't wrap Christmas presents, because I suck at it.
You want to hear the cruelest thing you'll hear all day?
What's that?
Maybe, maybe not. I suck at wrapping Christmas presents. Better than me. And like your lady, my lady is very good at wrapping Christmas presents. Well, all her gifts I got for her, I had them in boxes, separate boxes. Would it have been ethical if I just made her wrap her own Christmas gifts?
I don't know.
I thought about it. I didn't do it.
That'd
be like, I'm going to shoot you. Here's a shovel. Dig your own grave.
Yeah. I could have been fine. I I personally have gotten to the point where, and it's funny because me being me, I prefer to open a present. I don't know why. There's something magical about opening up a present, right? Ripping open the, I don't necessarily get the same feeling from opening up a bag, but I have just become a full blown, like, it's in a bag. Like, for example, for your girlfriend's present this year, you still have part of it. But the wife wrapped the other part, and I took that, and I was like, by the time I get it from Goss, I don't know if I'll have time to wrap it. So I took the wrapped portion of the present, even though it literally goes hand in hand with what you're going to be giving it me. I threw it in a bag and put some tissue paper over. I'm like, when I get it, I'll just throw it in. So one of them will be wrapped and the other one won't.
I can wrap it, but it'll be with this shitty Dollar General paper.
It doesn't matter. But I mean, yeah, so I just don't wrap. I wrapped. You should see my present to the wife. It was a bigger box. Three different types of paper, because the first one ran out, and then I used the second one to cover it, and then there was like a little strip that was still visible, and so I found a scrap piece of a different type, and so there's literally three different types of paper wrapping this thing.
That's the true Christmas miracle.
And then the other present got wrapped in thrown in the bag. There was one year that I wrapped her birthday present. I got her a wine fridge, wrapped it in Aldi's bags.
That's class.
I was a poor college student, and I didn't want to buy paper.
Let me ask you, if you were to have a Christmas tradition movie of watching while you wrap gifts, even though you don't really wrap them, what would it be? What would that cozy movie be for you?
How about this? How about Christmas watching while I open gifts?
You know, past few years we've been doing that too, like just play something on mute kind of deal.
Yeah.
It's been happening.
The Undertaker documentary.
Yeah,
I don't know why that's so ingrained. Maybe that was just like one of the most special Christmases to me because I'm materialistic. But that Christmas, I mean, I got my PSP that year, and I got my PSP, and I just so clearly remember, like, you were a little older at that time. What, that would have been 2006?
Yeah, I was like 15, 16.
Yeah, so you were not in the, like, the, I guess you were maybe out of the phase of playing with your Christmas presents all day, and so you fell back to sleep.
At that time, what I would ask for is like movies.
Yeah, but it was like you got the Undertaker documentary. I got my PSP, and Dad fell back to sleep. Mom went back to bed. You fell asleep, and I was just sitting there playing my PSP literally all day. I don't know why that's so ingrained in my memory, because like it was just playing like the Undertaker documentary. I've liked the past, for whatever reason, I've liked the past couple years I like the Christmas Story playing in the background. I know a lot of people don't. That mostly comes from being at the wife's house on Christmas Day, because they're a Christmas, it's her dad. My father-in-law is very big on the Christmas Story, and so just has that playing like all day, like the 24-hour marathon. Mm-hmm. So the Christmas Story is a big one. That or also their Christmas opening movie is Charlie Brown Christmas. Again, her dad is a very big Charlie Brown fan. But I've liked in the past years, you've had like Chamber of Secrets on or some shit, like just a Harry Potter movie. I'm like, this isn't bad. This is change of pace.
Yeah, last year was Chamber of Secrets. Year before that was Die Hard. And I believe year before that was It's a Wonderful Life. But this year will probably be whatever they got in the house, which is, I believe, Jingle All the Way, Die Hard, Die Hard 2, which people forget Die Hard 2 is a Christmas movie as well. And
Jingle All the Way is the best Christmas movie.
Yes. But getting back to Home Alone, we talked Home Alone in depth and our feels for it. We talked Home Alone to a spit. We've neglected to mention the other ones. Now, it's hard to think of it, or accept this, rather. There are 6 Home Alone movies, and even harder to accept, I own all of them except for the newest one.
I don't think it's gonna be physical release.
It will probably eventually. I got this really sweet collector's edition of all the Home Alone movies in this like paint bucket tin that houses all the movies plus some extra goodies.
I got that for Christmas.
I bought it for myself for Christmas. I ordered it from Amazon, but I got like some Amazon gift cards or something. So I got it for like basically free. And I love that thing. I have hardly seen 3 since I was younger. Now, when I was younger, I used to love Home Alone 3. I haven't seen it in a long time, and I wonder if it's actually as bad as people say it is. I know that the heart isn't necessarily there, and I'm nostalgic, so would the fact that there's no Kevin McAllister, no Macaulay Culkin, no Wet Bandits, Daniel Stern, Joe Pesci, is that why I don't like it, or is it actually not a good movie? I'd like to check it out again and see. It's weird, too. You know, it's the plot is this boy gets a hold of this RC car that these terrorists put this, like, microchip for this nuclear warhead or something inside of it, so they're trying to get it back, and he fucks them up with micro machines. But then there's a fourth one, which I've never seen. There's a fifth one.
Is that the one that pretends to be Kevin McAllister?
I think it's the fifth one.
That pretends to be Kevin McAllister.
Yeah, he doesn't pretend. His character is Kevin McAllister. And French Stewart is Marv.
What are you squinting out? It's not even bright.
Yeah, and then Home Sweet Home Alone, from what I understand, is the worst one.
I watched the pitch meeting for it, and it sounds just awful.
Yeah. No thanks.
I saw that people are very upset. I forget who it was. Some actress, I believe it was an actress or something, was upset with their marketing for the film because she said it's a kid holding guns and in this era of school shootings that shouldn't be there. I believe it's something along the lines that she said, and I was like,
That's fair.
Yeah, I was like, huh, that's it. He is holding like two big guns, and that's just the movie. Like,
that's fair. They should have done what they did in the original movie where he's holding, in some promotional material, he's holding two hair dryers, like guns.
Yeah. Because that's kind of what he's using household goods.
Yeah,
not,
it's
not
like
Nerf
it's
guns
like
and shit.
A symbol of the gimmick of the movie. Yeah, but he never uses his hair dryers.
But indeed, speaking of the gimmick of the movie, this movie is very much a comedy family film, Christmas film. You ready to take it to the factory?
Let's take her there. Let her take you there.
All right. So this portion of the film, this is where we take, or portion of the podcast, rather. This is where we take the film we just watched and imagine what it would look like if it was a different genre. That's what we're doing today. Usually in the factory, it's where we take the film. We have a little fun with it, change things up, imagine what it would look like if it came out today with modern booking or animated movie, imagine it live, baby live. But today, we're going to take Home Alone and picture it as a horror movie. Picture it. Who would direct Home Alone as a horror movie? What are maybe some aspects that we would change in the movie, so to speak? And so with that being said, have at it. What are you thinking? Who would you have direct this horror movie? What are you thinking for the horror movie? Anything changing, etc., etc.?
Yeah, I don't know. It's I saw that fan-made trailer of Mrs. Doubtfire where they re-edit the movie to look like a horror movie, and it works. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yes.
It's like a thriller about the psychopath, which isn't far off. I was like, it got me thinking, thinking of gimmicks for what we're going to do for Home Alone. What if you took that movie and made it a horror movie? Who would direct it? Because currently, Chris Columbus directs Home Alone, King Cozy himself. So what if we put a horror movie director in those shoes and Home Alone was suddenly a horror movie? I'm jumping back in time for my pick because he's not necessarily known for horror now, but he certainly was when he started, and he went back to it eventually, and produces a lot of horror stuff now. But that is Sam Raimi.
I thought that might be where you're going.
Yeah, Evil Dead. Evil Dead, but also just his style of shooting action. A lot of the, it's hard to explain verbally. You have to kind of visually see it. A lot of it will be like focused on an item and the movement going on behind it, but the item is like focused, whether it's like a evil monster face or a dagger or a hand or an eyeball even. But yeah, his go with especially Evil Dead 1 being a strict horror movie is kind of where my mind went to direct Home Alone, this boy who's making these booby traps set to kill these bandits who are actually demons trying to steal his soul.
Holy shit. I decided to do it where it's fairly similar film. Fairly similar. Imagine this. Picture this if you will. Imagine a film where it all plays out the same way, relatively the same way. Although Kevin, amongst his journeys to the basement, begins to realize that there's something sinister living down there, some kind of entity living in the basement, and that entity is going to protect Kevin, keep him safe. And in doing so, as the sticky bandits, the wet bandits, the stiff bandits work their way in to this home, they're met by a demonic presence trying to keep them out, protecting this child, and horror aspects ensue with all your normal horror cliches and jump scares. And so for that, I chose another. It's funny that you did Sam Raimi directing Multiverse of Madness, and I chose Scott Derrickson, who directed Doctor Strange. But also directed such films as Sinister and The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Originally, I was thinking of casting to direct the movie the pa a pair of actors that did Paranormal Activity 3, because I was thinking in my head, like, oh, there's a demon that's protecting these kids. Old Toby. No, I think I looked at Sinister and the kind of feel that you get from old Mr. Boogie, Bagul, and his interaction with the kids and getting the kids to do bad things for him, to claim lives, and then he claims the soul of the kid, so to speak. So I was like, that'd be good. It's like Bagul, but he's, instead of having him kill Kevin kill his family, he's having him kill these burglars.
Jesus.
It'd be very all you ever heard of slash seen the movie Don't Breathe, where like
I've heard of it. I haven't
kids
seen it.
kids break into the home, and very quickly it kind of reverses roles. It'd be like that.
I hear you. Yeah, that's pretty dark. It's
Hey,
pretty sick, Chubbs.
we said horror movie. It's a horror movie.
Indeed. Let me go grab the coin and we'll find out who's who.
Okay.
Oof.
Do you know it's Vincent D'Onofrio in Sinister?
What's that?
So, did you know it's Vincent D'Onofrio in Sinister?
Doing what?
He's the one that's like, it's his name is Bagul. He's like the professor.
I haven't seen that in such a long time.
It's very good.
I'm an idiot. I went to go get the coin, which is on the other side of the room. So I got out of my chair, walked over, forgot I was wearing a headset, and it just like
I've done that.
twung me back.
I've done it so
All
many
right.
times.
Heads, Scott Derrickson.
Yes.
Tails, Sam Raimi. Ooh, it's dark in here. I almost lost it. It is heads.
Hey, Scott Derrickson, the Doctor Strange himself, Sinister himself. Indeed, indeed. So there we have it. Anything else before we close out the show?
If you had your choice, Christmas Day, what movie are we watching in the background?
This year?
Aye.
That's a tough one. This
Undertaker documentary.
the Undertaker documentary, bring it home.
Oh, I don't have that. I lost that in high school.
It'll be good though. This would be better. This would be fun actually. I think you'll I'll say this and you'll be like, yeah, that'd be fun. Not the Undertaker documentary, but let's go back and watch some of the old school tributes to the troops ones.
The WWE shows.
WWE tribute to the troops. Yeah, let's go back and watch some of those old ones.
Now
That's where I prefer it.
those ones are at the house.
Are they? I mean, they're on WWE Network or the Peacock too.
I suppose, yeah.
But
yeah, I if I were to choose, and I was thinking about it because, you know, we are coming home. I don't know. The Shining. That and that's it. Close enough.
I think.
I think that's Old Man Marley's.
The only reason I know that popped into my head was because I've been watching a lot of Kill Counts, and I was watching the Friday the 13th ones, and the one today was like, it does a pretty good score, but I'm pretty sure it's just sped up Shining theme, and it was.
Does he do a Kill Count of Home Alone 1 and 2?
He should. Indeed. Indeed. Well, that does it, unless you have anything else.
That about does it. Wraps are all up like a nice present.
I should have said that does it. Or are you thirsty for more? So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our primary site. That's where we post the show to first. And then subsequently, it gets shot out everywhere else. So Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you get podcasts. Hey, we are there. You can also find us over at Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. This will be posting clips of the show, links to the show, memes Gus makes, and things that we're going to be watching, etc., etc., etc. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Facebook, we're coming in. Go to Facebook, type in The Brothers Movie Factory, not The Sticky Bandits, and you'll find us. I like to post memes of what we're watching each and every week, as well as the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and that.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it, but until next week, brothers...
Brothers.